Hello, everyone. My name is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Dan Kelson, and Dan is the co-founder, all right, of two companies. The first one is PlexiCam.com. This is a remarkably simple, nearly invisible untripod built to help people get that eye-to-eye human contact we're all missing from the pandemic lockdown without the high costs of tripods, teleprompters, and other traditional pro gear. So it's definitely amazing and nifty. And the second firm that we're going to talk about that he's a co-founder of, I hope I'm saying it right, is Viventus. Great. Viventus.com. Again, this is a virtual events as a service, which delivers high-end virtual events without the wallet-breaking cost of a Vegas or a New York production crew. And Viventus is for brands that want to make sure that their brand identity and customer experience don't suffer from boring, badly done virtual events done on the cheap. And so, again, so this is very, this is for people that are very budget conscious, and it helps people save money. Other types of events can cost hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars. And turns out there's far more to virtual events than just what the audience sees. So we're going to get into that during the interview, of course. So we're very fortunate to have you here, Dan. Obviously, you're a very busy man, so you're able to carve out some time in your packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So I guess to start off, can you just talk to us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yeah, so there's a good quote, not all who wander are lost, and that's certainly been my career. When I left home to go to college, my plan was to be a rock star, which is, of course, why I ended up in high tech. Because it's easier.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, part of what attracted me to music was it was fun. And for me, collaboration and teamwork is a huge part of my life. So I don't like to do things purely as a solopreneur. There are some people that thrive as solopreneurs. I'm not one of them. So I work best with at least a partner, if not a small team. Ideally, I like working with smaller companies. 50 or under is nice because then everybody actually knows each other. You can leverage all your strengths and weaknesses. And it's exactly what I experienced as I played in rock bands in the 80s and 90s.
Wow.
We go down that path. So it's really, what can you take? It's a give and take situation. So it's not about just just the lead singer, for example. I was never a lead singer. I played keyboards and guitar, bass sometimes. But what could you do together? And I saw that ported over from, I used to play soccer too. So that's very much a team sport. There's too much field to cover for one person. You can't be
right.
So that led me into high tech. IT tech support was sort of my early career. And understanding what I've found over time is, I don't speak multiple languages, although I'm working on it. Thanks to the magic of the internet and Duolingo and YouTube, wonderful resources. But what I've always been good at is understanding different ideas and helping to translate them to other people who do not have the patience, they don't have the willingness, they don't have the background, whatever it is, to make it fit into the world so they understand it well. So I'm very good at usually translating from tech people to business people or normal human beings who have no idea what the technical people are talking about, or vice versa, which is a terrible divide. You know, business people can't talk to the technical people to identify what they want. Mm-hmm. So the technical people can't deliver it because they also don't know how to talk in the other direction to pull it out. So that's a lot of my role has been about. And it's creating teams that do great collaboration, that actually know what they're trying to accomplish and can clearly identify that. And a lot of that in the end has to do with psychology, which is an accidental discovery of mine. I thought I hated psychology. It turns out I had some bad courses in college, but real behavior especially for user experiences and things like that. Very interesting to me, and it's a huge part of what I believe is the strengths of any company that I can get involved in.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's incredible. So you started off being a musician, which is, I think, amazing. And you love that teamwork and that camaraderie that you found as a musician, because you were in a band, but you found that in business, and you're all about working with teams. And so you're very much a social animal. You like to be around other people, which is great. You're probably going to live a long life, because they say the longest lived people tend to have very strong social ties and communities.
Oh, so, there you go.
That's incredible. So you went from being a musician to the high tech world, but you're very good at translating that jargon into everyday language for people and entrepreneurs to understand, and that's amazing, and that's incredible. And it's clear that you enjoy what you do, and when you enjoy what you do, you never have to work a day in your life. I'm hoping you still play music on the side. I hope, right? You still play?
A little bit. If I had another camera shot this way, I have 5 guitars and a couple basses and a keyboard.
Wow.
I'm not playing any of those for you today, but
okay, no worries. And you also try to learn languages, which is great. I'm trying to do that when I have the time and the discipline. I hear Duolingo is pretty good. I actually tried Duolingo for a while and actually really liked it, but it's something you have to pay for, and I was using the free version, so I don't think I really had the full grasp of what Duolingo is about, but I've heard great things about it.
I'm obsessed with and I'm sure we can talk about this some more too, but lifelong learning is a huge part of what I believe in. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. My intention was to be a rock star. That was literally what I wanted to do. And it turns out that there was a period there where I did not like performing, but I liked the behind the scenes stuff, the creating songs and all that. But, if I have not embraced lifelong learning from the very beginning of my career, we wouldn't be talking today. I wouldn't have done any of the stuff that I've done for the last 20 years, because it has almost nothing to do with music. Aside from production skills I learned that I apply from music into video and the things that I do in the two companies I have now, everything else, totally made up in the last 30 years. And if I hadn't been curious enough to keep diving into that, then I wouldn't be anywhere. And that constant learning, Duolingo is a great example of a fantastic learning environment that helps to reinforce you. Science based, it's really remarkably well done. It's fun. Why can't it be fun? Wow. The same with music. If you're interested in music, Rocksmith is actually music game, kind of like Rock Band, or Guitar Hero, if you're familiar with those.
Right.
Rocksmith is you play a real guitar or bass, and it treats you as though you don't know anything until proven otherwise. And really gently levels you up. It's funny because it sounds sort of insulting in some ways, but it's like you can't teach people if they don't have the foundation, right?
Right.
Can you build the foundation quickly? And that's what Rocksmith does. Actually, it's a case study in my book, The Gen Z Effect, created by some Berklee graduates. And it makes learning guitar way more fun than when I was learning to play music.
Wow.
Because you actually learn songs that you want to learn, not just scales, not just the exercises that make you want to pass out, but have fun learning things and progress from there and get more complicated. We can talk a lot about learning. Like
that's incredible. And the tools that we have now for people to learn music, I'm guessing is way more advanced. And I'm guessing that's why we have so many more musicians now. And obviously people can put their music up on Spotify, which is amazing and whatnot. So I'm curious now, obviously, I wanted to know now you've been working in the events industry and technology for a while now. What is the current state of affairs when it comes to events and whatnot? And what challenges has the pandemic posed?
Yeah. So, nobody really saw the pandemic coming, of course, right? So it caught us all off guard. So to me, one of the important things that I try to pay attention to is, I call this Next Future Today. It's actually a podcast that I'm going to launch shortly that I thought of about a year ago right now. And that's the idea. You know, there's a saying that the best time to plant a seed for a tree is, you know, 20 or 80 or 100 years ago, because then you get the benefit of the tree and shade and all that stuff.
Right.
The next best time is today, right? So
right.
We don't have time machines, so we can't go back in time and plant that tree that we want now.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Of course.
And you can't make it grow faster because that's not how it works.
Right.
But I actually interviewed about 100 people. I never published the research, but I reached out to, I have a pretty extensive network on LinkedIn, and I reach out all the time to find new people. And that's partly how we met. You found me through Chris. I asked executives, startups, lots of people across the U.S. primarily, how did their plans change? They had plans on January 1 last year. Mm-hmm. How had they changed by April, May? So it was a couple months into the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And did they have to blow up their plans and start mm-hmm. from scratch? Did they just need to tweak a little bit because they already had a solid foundation to deal with uncertainty? Mm-hmm. Did they slam on the brakes and stop and like, oh, it'll be over in a month, you know, 2 months, which would have been nice, but that you can't bet on things like that. You know, it happened suddenly, the biggest impact in the world. Now what? So my theory was that if you had not already had some skills at innovation and at dealing with things that were not expected for your business, that was not going to end well for you. And I need to do the follow-up research for that.
Right.
Who I talked to and where they ended up. But I talked to a lot of companies that, they were concerned and they had taken some steps to cut costs and whatnot. But the ones that were the best positioned, they put serious money into marketing. And if you look at the trends generally, the ones that actually pushed forward during a recession, depression, pandemic, whatever, and really tried to do what you would normally do in a thriving environment, but even more so in getting the word out, that's a chance for you to grab a massive amount of mind share in business.
Wow.
And that is, if you apply that to events, you know, companies like I've worked with a lot of software, hardware, tech companies, they would do webinars all the time, which, you know, have been notorious for years of being death by bullets, very, very boring. You would rather not have to to hear or see that stuff. So it's that was what people leapt into when their physical events went away.
Right.
Or was the pandemic, right? So this is, again, you know, so when I would look at people to say, so what are you doing? Oh, we're going to wait a year and do our annual event in a year.
Well, right.
What if the pandemic is still on? And it is.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah. You're going to wait another year? What did you do? Why were you doing events in the first place? It's because you're trying to build your audience, get new partners, get new customers, get news coverage, all that kind of stuff. So part of what we've seen through the Viventus business is if you care about, you've put serious money and effort into building a brand, you're known for whatever you're known for, you have fans, you have competition, you probably have people that don't like you, like the constant battle with Microsoft and Apple, for example.
Right.
But if you want to magnify that at all, you can't go dark for a year.
Right. Right.
So the ones that are working with us, they care about it. The downside of traditional production companies that are from Vegas or New York or LA and whatnot, they're very expensive. They're experts. They are the people that you would normally call that roll up semi-trailer trucks and tons of equipment for your physical in-person events and take over the massive convention centers.
Right.
But they're expensive. And, you know, if you're going to spend money intelligently for marketing, why not? You actually can do it better, faster, cheaper. You don't have to only pick two, which most people think. You can actually take a giant leap into the future and not have to deal with all of the legacy costs of what a typical broadcast production crew would think of as normal for the last 30 years, because everything has gotten much simpler. You know, the software I'm using right now is $200, $300. That would have cost $300,000 20 years ago to do this.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. So obviously it's all about adapting. And you know, they say that life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond. And obviously some people responded well. Others may not have done so well in responding. So you interviewed a lot of people, and you have experience interviewing, and you sort of surveyed these a lot of folks. to see what they were doing. And so the ones who decided to push on even more, they made out it. I guess they made out further ahead than other firms who did the opposite, and I guess went into hibernation, so to speak, right. And got into a cave and, or I don't want to say they put their head in their sand, but you know, maybe decided to lay low. Yeah. And so that's amazing. That is incredible. And so it just goes to show you that even during tough times, firms can still, you mentioned the word mind share. So a lot of these firms are still trying to grab mind share.
Right.
And they saw it as an opportunity. And I guess with crisis, sometimes come opportunity. I used to tell people that crisis in Chinese also includes the symbol for opportunity.
Yes.
I further researched this out, and it turns out this is somewhat like of a myth. So not quite exactly.
No.
I understand, but I still love saying it because it made so much sense. But obviously, right. Still, you know, but there is actually, always that.
You should run away when there's a crisis.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny because during the Great Depression, they say a lot of great businesses were created during that time. I'm sure you're aware of. And so it's amazing that even during tough times, you know, you don't want to go to sleep, so to speak. And I think that's great advice. Obviously, when life gets a lemon, you make lemonade. And there are a lot of firms that made off like bandits during the pandemic because they made changes. They adapted. Obviously, you have these virtual events because we can't really do these physical events. And so many people are liking it and whatnot. And I'm guessing as the pandemic goes away, their popularity might still go up or still will remain. And I'm wondering, where do you see things in the future? And where do you see yourself in that future?
Yeah, hopefully those two things line up.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, I like to embrace change when I can. You know, it's always, even people that like change, you don't like all change necessarily, or it takes a bit to get used to it. I think as far as virtual events goes, I don't know if I'll still be in the virtual events business directly per se, but, you know, virtual events. So I've done a lot of research and I've done consulting doing, it's usually behavioral changes for enterprises. So how do you get giant workforce? I did work years ago for Lowe's Home Improvement, for example, 200,000 employees, 60% turnover rate, because a lot of those are seasonal for, you know, winter, you know, the big pushes throughout the year. And you have to ramp those people up very, very quickly. So you need to have quite efficient processes to get people into the system to know what they're doing so that when they have an angry customer or an excited customer in front of them, they are happy to be there to serve them and not terrified to wonder what they're going to ask them that they might not know.
Yeah.
So, you know, behavior change, you know, there's a lot of myths about that, like 21 days to create a new habit. It's not true. It's not, and it's certainly not universally true. It might be true for one person out of 100, but you can make behavior change happen much faster than most people think.
Right.
And now if you look at what did the pandemic do for us, it's now more than a year that we've been under the specter of this. And to a certain extent, we're used to it, just the raw experience, but from, you know, the work from home experience. I've worked from home for years because I've had my own business and I've been consulting, and it doesn't always make sense to go into an office. Plus I live in the Boston area. It could take me an hour to go 10 miles.
Right.
I don't have to do that. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
But you know, with now 15 months under our belt for almost everybody who's not an essential worker or has to be in some physical location that's not their house, most people are quite comfortable with work from home.
Right.
The same for virtual events. I mean, there are some great in-person events that I miss. I would love to be able to go to. I would love to go to Broadway shows and see rock concerts again and all that.
Yeah.
That's a very different experience than just being at home. But for everything else, you know, if you just need to keep on top of things as a professional and you want to sit in on an hour-long session out of 3 days worth of content at a conference, why should you have to go there? Just to pluck out that one piece that you know you're interested in. And if it's recorded and you can come back to it later anyhow, then you don't need to be there unless it's some massive, you know, world-changing reveal that's happening today and you have to be there. You know, our expectations of what's normal now for events and work from home and work from anywhere are very different now. And we've had, this is like the longest period that we've had where massive behavior changes happen literally around the world. And, you know, we've talked, because we're running a virtual events business, we talked to airlines and hotel owners and that to find out what's going on. And they don't expect a return to normal for real until 2024, 2025 or so.
Wow.
So, you know, like I don't, the next time I want to go to Vegas is probably 10 years from now.
Wow. Really? Oh my.
I don't need to be in a, like the Amazon reInvent experience is like 50,000, 60,000. I forget how many attendees they get there.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And I never liked large crowds in the first place. So go there on purpose to be among the crowd at Vegas. It's going to take a while for me and for most people. And that's what the industry is betting on too.
Wow. And you are obviously you're a social person, but I think you told me that before 50 or small team was a sweet spot. So not a ton of people, which I'm kind of the same way. I get claustrophobic with a lot of people. And so again, thank you for that answer. And it's interesting. So what you're describing may be a new normal where we'll never really get back to the way things were right before the pandemic. A lot more people are going to stay working at home and whatnot. And obviously there's a lot of advantages to this because they say that people working at home are actually more productive and work longer hours. I'm sure employers are looking at that and liking that. And
advantage of it.
It's interesting. You talked earlier about how you yourself may not directly in the future be with working with virtual events, but you might be in behavioral change. And you talked about your experience at Home Depot. And I wasn't too familiar with the high turnover rate there, but obviously it makes sense with the seasonal and whatnot. And so, but you'll always have your foot in the door with when it comes to virtual events. And that's amazing. And so it also saves a lot of time and money you don't have the long commutes and the travel time. And so that's very beneficial. But obviously we're all kind of social animals. So we, I guess people do like to be near other people, at least some of the time. So I'm guessing we'll still see a return of that to some extent.
People are calling those hybrid events. So I think, it used to be that, so, you know, some of what people are saying, the shift in the last year is, it's a digital first approach to events, right? So that's all you have. So it has to be digital. It should be first and arguably, so I've done a lot of innovation research and innovation consulting and, you know, of an awesome idea. It's been a while since I've run these workshops, but I used to say, if I gave you a Tesla, completely self-driving, never has an accident, self-charging, everything, it's the magical vehicle. Would you take it? And half of the people in the crowd would say yes. And then I'd ask the other, and then I'd ask those people, okay, would you actually use it though? And, you know, I still haven't personally experienced a self-driving car and I'm pretty sure it would freak me out. Like most people do when you see the videos of them, like, I can't believe this car. I can't do anything to steer it. I can't stop it. You're giving up a lot of control, but, a completely world changing experience that's for free has no downside whatsoever. And like 80% of people will still not do it. Right. Mm. So, any innovation takes time to get to the point where most people are doing it. Mm. So witness the internet. I mean, I was on the internet back in 1988 and it was a lonely, barren place, you know, no graphics, it was text only, very, very slow. You know, people think the internet is slow right now. They have no idea what it was back in the day when it would take an hour to download a photo that right now, you know, the worst camera that you could buy would take a million times better photos. That kind of thing when you think of this shift to virtual, it just kind of got thrust in it. And you know, if you own Zoom stock, which thankfully I bought Zoom stock, they're up like 600-1,000%. Which is insane. But they became, you know, even people who had never heard of webinars or video calls or anything, you could be 95 years old, you know what Zoom is. Because it's been talked about every day for a year plus, right? And that that's been great, and that was amazing timing on the part of Zoom. But it doesn't mean that everybody was good at it or that they liked it. They put any thought whatsoever into what they look like on camera. What do you, if you're running an event and you have to, you have side by side interviews, or you have a panel of five people and a moderator and somebody phoning in, right? You need to do slides that are large enough that people can actually read them, which, you know, in a lot of cases, people like to do the death by bullets and way more text than you can ever comprehend, no matter how big it is. This whole period in the last year has been a chance to reevaluate what actually works. And we don't have to think that, oh, if only we had a big stage. You know, I like presenting from a big stage. It's fun. You feel important. Right. You got all the spotlights on you. You can't see anything because the spotlights are blinding you. But, you know, seeing the crowd and feeling it and being there, that's a great time. But that doesn't mean that you can't do similar things in the virtual world. It's just we haven't had a reason to. It was always, yeah, I'm going to a webinar. Great. And now a webinar is no different from, you know, most people live their lives these days in Zoom. They're in a meeting, they're in a webinar, they're doing whatever. They're hiring people.
Right.
But it gets tiring. And, you know, by a couple of days, you know, a couple of hours in, you're like, oh man, there's another Zoom call.
No, I totally get that. You know, and again, thank you for that answer. It's interesting. You were on the internet in 1988. I didn't know they had the internet in 1988. That's, I'm guessing it makes sense. You know, You know, though, it's just that the internet kind of came out, I guess, in the 90s, but I didn't know it was still usable.
The web came out in the 90s,
Oh, okay. So the web came out in the 90s. So that's interesting. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, the internet itself was born in the 60s, I believe. It was a military research project.
That's amazing. And obviously, you know, when you look at the fast evolution and advancement of technology, apparently computers used to take up a room and a microchip used to be really big and whatnot. And so it's amazing. And but you had the foresight because you apparently purchased Zoom stock before. That's amazing. Yeah,
I lucked out. And actually Shopify, if you're familiar with Shopify. So I think that's fascinating. So e-commerce, I was building my first e-commerce site with a company that I worked with at the time, who's the CEO is my co-founder now, Tom. I was building an e-commerce site so we could sell seats to physical events that we used to run. We sold market research online. We sell consulting online, do most of our billing online. And that was 1996, I believe. And we did millions of dollars every year online, which scared the life out of most people. How can you trust the internet? Well, how can you trust anything? But you know, e-commerce, so one of the things I talk about in my book, The Gen Z Effect, is this concept of slingshotting. So when things suddenly change, you can suddenly go from, for example, do you remember when the iPad first came out?
Right.
People said, why do you need a huge iPhone? It's not a huge iPhone, right? You're not taking calls on your iPad, right? It's a different purpose. But what Apple had learned from the, you know, multi-finger, you know, speech to text, all that kind of stuff, was that normal human beings that are not like me, at least, they don't want to learn how to program. They don't want to. They don't want to know what a mouse is. They don't have to remember the secret keystrokes to copy and paste if they even know what that is. So they want to be able to grab it, take it, use it, throw it, whatever. They don't need a special place to go. It can be with them, and that caused a slingshotting moment. It was not the first tablet in the world, by far. It was like 10 or 20 years of tablets before that were terrible, and clunky. But within a year or so, 100 million iPads were sold.
Wow.
And that opened up to, you know, every tablet you can buy now looks like an iPad.
Wow.
It's been 10 years, right? So that, hundreds of millions of people, their first computer was an iPad. And that's the kind of major behavioral change that comes along. That's exactly what we saw with e-commerce. So if you're a mom and pop, you know, brick and mortar store, and you're a restaurant, right? In-person dining has not been a thing on a large scale for a year now.
Right.
If you want to survive, you better be able to order online.
Right.
And you need to figure out how do I deliver it curbside so people don't come into my small space probably, so that then I don't have a social distancing problem, so I can deal with that. Then Shopify is also up like 500, 1,000, 2,000%. It's something crazy. And thankfully, years ago, I learned about Motley Fool's, fool.com, investment site, which is awesome. And I forgot that I bought Shopify on their recommendation 2 years ago. And boy, that was great timing too. So it's,
wow.
If you look at that stock, it's just poof.
That's amazing. And, you know, it's interesting how so many people were fearful of buying stuff on the internet. And, you know, and now that's done all the time. So weird. And I remember a time when
Amazon.
It was, right. Amazon is like destroying a lot of these mom and pop businesses. And it's weird how so many people thought the idea of finding a date or on the internet was weird in the beginning. But now that's very, very common with the rise of dating apps. So it's it's interesting how the internet has so affected our lives and whatnot. And people can go on the internet all the time through their smartphone and whatnot. This would have been technology that would have been hard to think or about, would have been unimaginable back in the 80s and even the 90s or early 2000s. So it's definitely something that quite there, something amazing. So and obviously technology is going to continue moving. I'm curious now, obviously there's a lot of folks who do a lot of virtual events, and a lot of firms out there are trying to, you know, cash in on what's going on with the crisis and the opportunity that comes with it, because we can't do physical events. What makes you guys, I guess, sort of different and unique? And, you know, obviously you mentioned before about how you can do eye-to-eye contact. I'm curious, what is it about you guys that, I guess, what is the competitive advantage?
Yeah, so I mean, the two businesses, Plexicam and Viventa. So Plexicam, I'll show it to you like this. So I'm using one, of course, because I would use my own product. So I can't take that off of my monitor to show you because that would be awkward.
I wish I had it, but yeah.
We could solve that.
Yeah.
So it's there's a top piece that hangs off of your screen. Vertical piece, there's a shelf. This happens to be a Logitech 922, I believe it is. Slightly.
All right.
If it's there. So the idea, though, is if you're familiar with tripods, which of course,
I have
tripods. Here's a tripod. This is it's awesome. You know, it's it'll last longer than I will. this one's not particularly expensive. Probably $150.
But, okay.
You know, when you fold this out, it takes up a ton of space.
Okay.
And then when you extend the legs, it takes up even more space. It's the nature of how this works. But if you want to have control over where you put your camera, the worst place for a camera to be is at the top of the screen.
Right.
Then it's impossible to look at people unless you're looking at the camera, but then you can't actually see the people. Right.
Right.
It's in the wrong place because it's the only place that anybody's figured out how to put it anywhere useful.
Right.
So it's either, if it's built in, it's at the top or it's at the bottom of the screen. Neither one of those is a great place for it to be. You can have great camera discipline, as it's called, and look into the camera. But unless you have way better peripheral vision than I do, you're not going to be seeing the people around your camera, which if you're trying to make a connection, makes it difficult. So you could use a tripod, put a teleprompter on it, which is, you know, if you look at newscasts, you see the big machines that have what they're reading off of the screen. They're much cheaper now than they've ever been, but you can easily spend between a camera, a tripod, and a teleprompter if you want to be able to have that focus on the camera that's behind. You're talking $1,000.
Wow.
So my partner, he's always been a tinkerer. He had been playing around with this idea for his own use primarily for the last 10 years or so. And last year we were talking about this time, what should we do during the pandemic? Yeah, he was mostly doing, he would normally be on a plane somewhere around the world doing a keynote presentation. I was doing my own thing. We're like, well, virtual events are clearly going to be a thing, so we should do that. That's the Viventa side.
Yeah.
And maybe we should turn that product that you've been playing around with into a real product that we could sell, which was terrifying because neither of us had product companies before. Manufacturing and shipping internationally during a pandemic. you know, in hindsight, should have expected a little bit more pain than we had expected. But the benefit of Plexicam is if you are looking to make eye contact, which we're missing for the most part in most presentations that you see, it doesn't have to be expensive and complicated. It's three pieces of acrylic that we made in a specific shape. You know, we have hundreds of prototypes that look really terrible in comparison to what we ended up with. And I don't know what we were thinking, but it takes a bit to get to the final piece. And the moment that, especially professional speakers who really, you know, they get paid $1,000 an hour, $100,000 an hour to do a keynote.
Wow.
And if you don't look professional, if the audience doesn't feel like you connect with them like you would if you're standing on the stage and you're looking down to somebody talking to them in the first row, then they'll find somebody else who does provide that, because that's the deal if you're going to be a professional keynote speaker. And universally, the response we get is, oh my God, why didn't anybody else think about this? Because it's so simple. And it's not, you know, we're both high-tech people, but the camera is the only technology piece that's on this. And you can put any camera that you want to. So it's been interesting. And, you know, people around the world are buying it. It's fascinating to, you know, get an order from Israel that we have to ship out, or Australia or wherever. So there's that side of the business, and it sort of fits into Viventus, because we actually beta tested Plexicams by sending them out to the remote speakers that we had to pull into these events. The sweet spot for our events is usually 300 to 500 people in the audience, probably a half day at the least, or a day event that might be split across 2 days because we're all exhausted from staring at screens. or spread out over a week, for example. So in order for us to try to control the quality of what we were getting back from the speakers, who were not necessarily professionals, was to send the Plexicam with a camera, coach them, do some rehearsals up front so they could reorient towards, you know, the camera matters. And that's why you should put it wherever works for you on the screen, and give them some advice on lighting and whatnot. But, you know, a bare minimum that set the stage for uniform quality across the brand and customer experience. And then take care of the stuff that, you know, like, I don't know how to fix a car. I love cars. But, you know, to drive one and enjoy it, I don't need to know how it works. I don't need to know how to fix it. I have mechanics that can that can do that for me, right? Same thing for virtual events. So our argument on that side is, you know, it is very expensive and quite complicated to ramp up from no knowledge whatsoever on how to run a professional virtual event that looks good and feels good and has audience interaction. That takes time. I mean, I'm pretty good at rapid learning, but even having run lots of events in the past where we made our own events and made millions of dollars doing that, to do virtual events professionally right now, it's never been easier or cheaper, but it is not easy. And it's very expensive. You know, I've my basement studio here, I have $20,000, $30,000 worth of equipment because I need it to run and force screens to be able to run events on other people's behalf, which a normal human being should not have to do, right? Even if you're the VP of marketing and you have a marketing team, is that really where you should be spending your resources on, or should you just be doing the best marketing possible and let somebody else take care of that? So frankly, it's exhausting because it's exhausting and exciting because there's so much innovation happening now, because it had to happen. That demand for virtual events came across just in time. And you know, Zoom has exploded. There's tons of startups that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars for this space. And but it's not just the technology though. You have to know what it's like to produce an experience. What is the audience looking for? What are your sponsors looking for? And I think what makes us unique on that side is that we have owned all of that, and we know what it's like to have to coordinate across 50 or 100 different professionals to do food and beverage in your hotel and reserve room blocks and all that stuff, which is a nightmare. And thankfully, I've never had to personally do that piece of it. But you don't have to worry about that with virtual events. So you can, me, you can really get more focus on the content, the experience, and trying to build a community, which I think is what is usually missing. People focus on, this is an event in time, and then poof, all you people disappear, and I'll see you next year. Oh, now we care about you again. When you should. If you're going to build a community and punctuate it with an event, you should do it more often. Because virtual events are much less expensive than real world events.
Right.
That you can afford to do it more often, which is arguably what you should have been doing all along, but now it's more obvious.
Yeah. And virtual events definitely aren't going anywhere. And it's amazing, you know, the idea that you guys came up with, and it's so simple. A lot of these great ideas, and it's very innovative and creative. I was thinking maybe you guys should go to Shark Tank and show them, I don't know, for some reason, I was reminded of the show Shark Tank, but it also got me thinking, when you guys were, when you were explaining your answer about people that I can introduce you to and connect you with. I just thought of three people while you were talking, and it's great. And it's, you know, it's funny because I interviewed a guy who used to work for Apple, and he works and writes books on product management, and definitely want to get you over to him. So it's interesting. So you've had success. You've been selling this all around the world and shipping out to Israel. That is amazing. That is incredible. I'm guessing this is, it's simple, but this is obviously an idea you guys have had to patent or copyright, sure, or and whatnot. And that's, and that's
trademarks and patents. Yeah.
Wonderful. And
yes, we're keeping the legal profession in employed through the pandemic. So that's good.
So that's great to hear. So no one could just come in and steal the idea. So that's great. And it's interesting. So you obviously, this is something that there's going to be in the future higher demand for, because more virtual events leads to more camaraderie and whatnot in community, like you mentioned. Right. And so that's amazing. Now, I'm curious, obviously, you've helped a lot of people with this idea, and help, and obviously you've helped people when it comes to events or whatnot. I'm curious, are there any moving or entertaining stories you can tell us from your life or career?
Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything specifically from the events side, but I'll go back a bit to an interesting moment. So back in 2004. The company that Tom and I both worked for, he had founded it, was acquired by Perot Systems. So Ross Perot, if you recall him, the former presidential candidate who I actually voted for back in the day, his company acquired us, which was amazing. I never had a chance to meet him, and unfortunately he passed away, but it was interesting to be a part of that legacy and the history of what he had brought together. But I always forget the guy's name, but essentially Ross's right-hand man who had worked with him, been side by side with him. They might've been in the military together.
Right.
He definitely had a military background. He came to visit us because he's the guy that would normally come out to meet the new acquisitions that ProSims did. To meet the people and see what we did. And for us, this was Delphi Group. We were very different than everything else that Perot Systems had ever bought. So he and we were only 20 people or so at that point.
Yeah.
But he came in to meet all of us, and he said, look, and he was in his 70s, maybe. I don't know. He was an older gentleman, super, super nice guy. But he said, you know, I'm here to find out what you guys do, because honestly, you're very different than what Perot would normally acquire, which is big IT outsourcing outfit. So if I ask questions that seem like they're stupid questions, if I don't know something, I'm just going to ask about it. And you should feel the same way for me. If you don't know what Perot Systems does, or I mentioned something you don't understand, you should just ask, because the only stupid question is the one that you haven't asked. And this guy had to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, he had been Ross Perot's right-hand man for decades through EDS, his first company, and through Perot Systems. So he was... I don't know why he worked. Apparently he loved it. But he was a wealthy, very experienced, world traveling kind of guy.
And wow. To hear
that from him, I was like, wow, that is an incredible piece of advice. So I took that, and as I was doing consulting work, whether it was as a paid consultant from the outside or an internal consultant doing systems analysis and whatnot, I would often tell people, and I still try to do it today, look, I have no idea what you do. I know what your name is. I hope this is your name, right? Butchered that. So tell me how to say your name, and then show me what you do, because you have been doing this for, you know, a year, 5 years, 20 years. I've I've worked with pharmaceutical companies, some employees who have been there for 40 or 50 years and love it, which is amazing to me. You know, like, you know more, way more about this company, the job that you do, than I'm ever going to know.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to pull out of it is things that you've forgotten about potentially, or a different way of doing things because you've been swimming in it and you didn't realize there's some other way to do it from some other industry. So I just say, look, you can call me Danny the Dunce if that makes you feel better and assume I don't know anything. And if I look confused, it's because I'm confused. And I'm going to ask you what you mean by an acronym that I've never heard of before. Or when you talk about this system, whatever, I'm just going to ask what seem like stupid questions to you, but I don't know. So I can't help if I don't know. And the same, if I tell you something that you don't understand, just let me know. Don't sit there confused.
Right.
It was liberating to experience that. I mean, this guy, you know, that he's used to being a part of acquisitions that are like a half billion, $1 billion acquisition. And to have that sort of mindset and attitude, I was like, wow, if that guy feels completely comfortable, why don't I? Because I'm I don't have the legacy to stand on that you would think maybe he would feel like he has to know everything or that he does know everything. That's not true. So that was an interesting moment to me. I think from a music standpoint, this is fun. So if you know Frank Zappa, a famous artist, passed away 20 years ago or so, I believe. The band that I was in college, we had actually handed a copy of the tape to his son, Dweezil, who's the most famous of kids. And my apartment was the phone number that we had put inside the cassette that we had handed him. Nobody else was around. I got a call from Dweezil's Apple one night. He's like, man, your band is awesome. I just listened to it over and over again. The two guitarists, Joe and Manuel, they're incredible. We had a great conversation about music and music careers, and I was trying to line it up so we could open for him the next time we came into Boston, which by the time that happened, the band had broken up and we had gone our separate ways. But he was such a nice guy, and I, you know, I'd admired the Zappa legacy of everything they brought to it, that it was just an awesome, really genuine conversation with somebody who, you know, he hangs out with rock stars all the time. He is a rock star.
Yeah. So
talk to me. I was like, oh my God, how come nobody else is around to experience
this? That's amazing. Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing those stories. So Ross Perot was quite a character. I think a lot of people might be too young to know about him, unfortunately. Yeah. And he was a Texan billionaire. He got his money from from IT. And you got to meet with his right hand man. Did you get to ever meet the man himself, or?
I did not. So it's funny because I don't know if it's just me, but I sort of thought of Ross Perot Sr. as the only Perot person that existed on the planet for some reason. To me, he didn't have a family or kids or anything. He was just Ross Perot, short presidential candidate. Who I still think would have done a really interesting job as president. But Ross Perot Jr. was the CEO at the time that we got acquired. And it's funny, he's a much larger than life kind of guy.
Wow. Very good
body structure and everything. I met him ever so briefly as he was flying around the world to go to all the different offices that Perot had. But that legacy of the things that Ross believed in really did cut through the entire organization. There's a very clear sense of what your ethics were and how you needed to treat customers, which is a very high level of customer service. And that kind of experience also carried with me. I try to make sure that most of our clients, regardless of which business it's in, they feel like they can ask us anything. If they need any help whatsoever, they can always call me. You know, for the plexicans, we're selling them for as little as $45 up to $135. And I'll spend 50 minutes with a client who's trying to decide which one to get. Get on a Zoom call, have them show me their room and their setup so they can make the right purchase. Mm-hmm. Most companies don't do that. We're trying to sell through eBay as a way to get a broader reach into the market. You can't get a person on the phone at eBay. It's literally impossible.
Wow.
Their tech support or customer service is basically Well, it's too bad you're having a problem. Why don't you try turning off your computer and try again? Goodbye. And the chat ends. That's literally what happened 2 hours ago. You know, it's a shame. I think one of the other pieces that I learned from Pro Systems and in other situations after that was that customer service is everything. And if you provide, I don't want to settle for average customer service because it's kind of terrible.
So right.
It needs to be above that, and then you can get word of mouth marketing, which is the best you can ever have, because somebody else can say, these guys are incredible. I can't believe we had a client in Australia who wanted me to do an unboxing with her with a 13-hour time difference. So it was like 9 at night my time, and you know, 10 her time in the morning. And she asked for it at like the last minute. I was like, all right, let's I will pretend to be awake for this unboxing that you're doing.
And wow. Talk you through
it. But that's, you know, that's so rare, which is really sad, because it's a chance to make a real connection with your audience.
Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible. And word of mouth is great to have. And yeah. I could see why you get word of mouth from all the customers. And it's a great product, obviously. And again, thank you so much for sharing those stories. And I guess, it's always important, if you don't know something, to inquire so you know more about it. Don't be afraid of like looking dumb or anything like that. And definitely thank you so much for sharing those stories. I'm curious now, you talked earlier about the importance of relationships. You like being around people and whatnot. And we met through networking, right? And networking is all about building relationships, and it's great for entrepreneurs to know how to do that and to utilize it so they can get to a point where they mostly rely on referrals or solely rely on referrals, which helps a lot. And of course, I'm curious, and not just for entrepreneurs, but for job hunters as well. And because we have a lot of people looking for work and people who have a job but want to find a better job, or perhaps no job is secure, so they realize they still have to keep looking, even if they have one. What networking advice would you give to folks?
So, are you familiar with the book Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi?
Yes.
Okay. So, for those who haven't read it or haven't seen Keith present, he's a bit of a maniac. He apparently successfully sleeps only like 4 hours a night, and he's just like the Energizer Bunny. I met him on his second book tour, which is Who's Got Your Back. And had a great conversation with him. But Never Eat Alone, what I tell people, I've literally given away at least 100 copies of that book to people because I think it's so important. And what I tell people is just, you know, flip open randomly. You don't have to read it start to finish. Flip it open, read 5 or 10 pages, put it away for a bit, and use what you just learned, because he has so many ideas on how to make connections, how to continue to stay in touch with connections, which is even more important than having connections in the first place.
Right.
And he has just, it's a ridiculous number of ideas on how to make connections and extend them and be a good partner as somebody that you've been connected with.
Right.
It's really amazing. The tone of the book does come off as a little arrogant, but it's not his intention. And actually, I did talk to him on the second book. You could feel that there was definitely a very different shift in the way he wrote about it, the way that he approached the audience. But that book, I mean, just find a summary PDF about it for that matter. And figure it out. Because it's, until I read that book, honestly, I didn't really have a good idea of how to engage in small talk. Because I don't really follow sports. I'm not really into politics. I'm more into politics now because I think I've realized it matters. I don't see a point in talking about the weather necessarily, but once I could figure out how to talk to other people to find out what they were interested in and then connect that to what I'm interested in, that book, literally about 45 minutes of reading that book on the way to a conference that I was going to as an attendee, the year after that, I keynoted that event, partly because I used the techniques that Keith talked about in that book to get connected with the people that ran the show. So If I had not written that book, then a lot of the last 15 years of my career would probably not have panned out the way that it did.
Wow. That's amazing. It's a life-changing book.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, it's interesting. I read some of it. I didn't get a chance to read all of it. He was in the beginning, he was talking about his story, how he had humble roots, and he used to be an assistant to people who would play golf, who were very influential, and how he ended up in Harvard. So it's I definitely have to finish it. It's quite a book. I've actually read quite a lot of books on networking, and that's one of the reasons why I actually started the podcast, was so I can be able to use the podcast to build relationships. I think it's helped a lot. And I tell that to people all the time. If you want to network, interview people on a podcast and get that going. It's amazing. And, you know, they say the most successful people have the widest and deepest networks because they find out about opportunities. And, you know, the luckiest people know a lot of, you know, because, you know, the old saying, you never have to sell a friend, so to speak. And there's something to that. And so it's something that people need to look into doing more. And it's not easy for me to network because I'm actually an introvert. I don't know about you, but you're an introvert as well. Okay. So apparently being an introvert actually is somewhat advantageous when you network, because you're more likely to let other people talk and listen, which is so critical when it comes to networking. So again, thank you so much for that advice. I think that's a book everyone should go out and read and whatnot. And, you know, so I'm curious now, obviously, if someone maybe listening to this and may say to self, you know, I want to do what Dan's doing. I want to work in events and whatnot. Maybe not exactly, you know, what you're doing with Plexicam, whatnot, but what would you say to them? What advice would you give to someone who's interested in working in this industry?
Well, I think regardless of this industry or any other industry, I mean, I do think I've been telling people for years, I had a podcast that I did, starting in 2006, which was after we got acquired by ProSystems, to about 2010. And I got fairly well known in my industry because of that, because I had interviewed, probably ended up with about 200 interviews of authors and CEOs and startups, including my first interview, which was Konstantin Gerica, who's one of the original co-founders of LinkedIn. And I will never forget his name because I was terrified to say it wrong in the recording. And he's a German guy, now a startup funder in Germany. He moved back to Germany from Silicon Valley. Yeah. So what I found incredibly useful is, you know, just following in the vein of, if you don't know, ask. Ask somebody who's in an industry or a position that you're interested in. People do love to talk about themselves, and don't be needy about it, but, you know, find something they've written on LinkedIn or a video they did on YouTube or an article they wrote in the Wall Street Journal, I don't know, whatever it is, and reach out to them and ask to talk to them about it. Doing a podcast, I think, does build up some great skills, especially now if you're doing video. We're only going to have more video, and you might as well get better at doing that. So, and get better at asking questions and, you know, having real conversations. And it does put you on an interesting sort of level playing field if you're doing a podcast interview. Do you know Ramit Sethi at all?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Did he write the book How to Be Rich?
I'll teach you how to be rich. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's a terrible title. It sounds totally lame and overhyped. But he's had an amazing career. And if you follow his stuff, he is very good at understanding behavior and how to do smart marketing. He has what I used this before I even found out about his work, but he calls it the briefcase technique. So you come to any conversation, I've done this myself. So I ran into a guy back in 2007, I think it was, who had an interesting startup company that I wasn't even considering working there, but he was publishing some interesting stuff, and they had hosted a meetup that I couldn't get to. So I sent him an email and said, hey, you know, I meant to get to, it was a Ruby on Rails meetup, if you know that programming language. And I was like, you know, I'm really interested in Ruby on Rails. This was, you know, your office is three blocks away from mine in downtown Boston. I missed that, but I saw great reviews. Could we get together for lunch and you could tell me what happened? And would you do that event again? So that guy is Dave Cancel. One of his companies got acquired by HubSpot. He was a product lead, VP of product management, I believe, at HubSpot. Latest company is Drift, if you're familiar with Drift at all. hugely successful. He's the nicest guy in the world. Totally driven to learn, and he's constantly hustling and all that. But the whole technique with the briefcase technique is you get to know, you try to learn as much as you can about the company, the products, their customer service, all of that from the outside, so that when you have a conversation with somebody, you can say, hey, you know, I noticed that campaign that you did last week on Instagram versus 3 weeks ago, you only got like 100 likes on that versus 1,000. Have you figured out what happened there? And maybe you have some ideas on, have you seen this other company that did this technique and it blew up? So if you can make observations that actually give them some information that maybe they already knew, maybe they had already planned to do something about it. But if you show that you're really interested and you've spent time to understand what's going on, that is far more interesting than just, you know, blankly sending in a resume or something. So if, and I'm a huge fan of finding, this is the benefit of networking, if you can find a side door instead of trying to go through the front door, past the gatekeepers, you know, find who's, you want to do product management, find a product manager who went to the same college that you went to, or is from the same region of the world that you are from, or whatever, find some sort of connection, say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about getting into product management. Where did you start? If you did it over again, how would that work out? And just show that you care and that you've really put some serious thought and effort into it. And then you open your briefcase. And I haven't used a briefcase because who's done that in forever? But I showed up at a lunch one day because we got friendly, Dave and I, and I handed him like 3 sheets of paper. It's like, here's some of the observations I've had. The company at that point was Compete that he had co-founded. And here's some things I think you might want to consider doing for marketing. Here's some things I saw about your customer service. Here's some things about your competitors that here's how I think you differentiate. And, you know, this is for you. If you want to hire me, there wasn't even a position that was open at the time. And I never intended for any of this to happen.
Wow.
If this is useful to you, fantastic. You could run and do it without me. If you're interested in me in playing a part, let's talk about that. But otherwise, these are just, I'm fascinated. And I was fascinated by what Compete was doing. Mm-hmm. And here's my observations. And he actually went to bat, created a position, got it funded for me. But I was busy hustling on other areas too. And actually in the space of 1 week, I had 3 completely different job opportunities that landed. Wow. Totally different. They couldn't have been more different. It would be very hard. And probably chose incorrectly, as it turns out, because I did not choose to work with them.
Well, okay. Nice. That's amazing.
But it got me in the door, and that's, you got to stand out, and making connections is a key to that. So a referral, some people see that it's like cheating or something, which I don't understand how in the world that would be. You should use whatever you can ethically get in the door and make a connection and really try to do something that's going to make you stand out.
Wow, that's a great strategy, particularly now when we have higher than average unemployment for people to follow, the importance of standing out. I used to read a book called Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters and had a lot of amazing ideas by J. Conrad Levison. You may be familiar with him, right?
I know the series. I don't know if I've read that one.
Yeah. And so that one was pretty good. And there's a lot of great job hunting books. You mentioned before, you talked about the briefcase technique. And that's an amazing strategy. And it was developed by that guy, Ramit.
Yeah, Ramit.
And definitely, I haven't read his books, but I'm definitely going to check him out. It seems like you hold him in high regard. So I'm going to look into him more.
At his marketing. His marketing is unbelievable. He really understands how to get into the mind of a customer, answer. Mm. When he does a list of frequently asked questions for a course that he's offering or whatever it is, they are clearly the real questions that they get. And it's not just the frequently asked questions. It's, you know, like, is this course right for me? And he specifically says, usually, if you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you should pay that off first. And if I find out that you have that and you're still taking our course, I'm not going to let you take the course, which is pretty
bold.
And I believe that's true, because I actually, I did one of his courses and I could afford it. But in the end, they had warned me in the frequently asked questions that if you're not this kind of person, you should not take this course. And a week into it, I was like, you know what? I'm actually not that kind of person. I didn't have that kind of business. And they just refunded the money. They're like, well, that's why we put that warning.
Yeah, that's great. That's and it shows he's not desperate and pushy, and he cares about customers and whatnot. Yep. And so, and that actually helps him more in the long term. Yeah, builds up a lot of goodwill and obviously gets him a lot of word of mouth and referrals and whatnot. So amazing. And and I'm obviously repeat business. I'm curious now, obviously you shared with us a lot of important life lessons and whatnot. And in addition to the ones you shared, do you have any other vital life lessons that you've learned yourself or from others?
Well, I think I've already covered it a little bit. I mean, constant learning is really the key. I mean, most of, you know, I was on the internet very early, but the internet in 88 is very different than 2021, right? So the idea of TikTok, for example, it would have never been possible for the first 20 years of the public use of the internet. It was not possible.
Yeah.
So you need to be paying attention because things can change. We saw in the last year, you know, all of a sudden the best run companies in the world can get slapped sideways when, you know, airlines made tons of money, people flying every day. You know, I don't know that I've done a million miles of air travel, but I've done a lot. And I certainly have plenty of friends who are million mile members. But, you know, all of a sudden, poof, that just, you know, that industry shut down.
Right? Yeah.
You know, which rippled out into other areas, restaurants, all that. I feel very bad. Even in good times, it's hard to run a restaurant because you're, you know, the inventory you have is literally rotting as we speak. Right. So when it's not good to thrive at all, you really have to be on top of your game. So if you are not constantly sharpening the saw, is sometimes how that's mentioned. You should be really looking out for what's going on, so you have a chance to have a parachute potentially to bail out and jump into something else, and be willing to potentially throw away a lot of what you thought you used to do to get onto something else that has a future to it. Like I've been a fan of alternate energy for a long, long time, back to a middle school teacher that I had who was talking about it a long time ago. And, you know, like I love solar, but until recently, it has never been cheap enough to be effective, especially for somebody like me in New England with winter months and whatnot. So it's, you know, if you're not paying attention to the opportunities that open up that are constantly changing, then you're probably going to have a brief career that is probably not what you want, because I'm assuming most people have bills to pay and families to raise and you know, and vacations to be had and all that kind of stuff. So if you want to remain viable, constantly be learning. And I do think that podcasting, you know, back in 2006, I thought I was late to podcasting, which is really funny, because compared to now, there's got to be like a million times more podcasts than there were at that point. But it is a great way to learn. And, you know, a lot of the people that I've interviewed over the years have been friends all the way through, and I tap them for advice. You know, I have friends that I've made around the world. So when we're trying to sell to Denmark, for example, I've reached out to, I have about 50 people connected to in Denmark to say, hey, how do I sell into Denmark? Do you know any distributors in Denmark? Because I've, you know, assuming people in Denmark want to buy my product, and they do, we've had some anyhow, how do I do it on a larger scale? And then they can potentially introduce me, one person introduced me to the CEO of the largest Mac retailer in Denmark. And we're not a good fit, which is fine, but I would have never, how would I have ever found him if I hadn't asked? So it's, that's, you know, constantly learning, not just from books, but from other people. And most people are willing, you know, unless it's something super top secret that they can't talk about, they want to share their knowledge and what they've learned. They don't necessarily want to see other people have to struggle in the ways that they did. Why not help shortcut something so you can get to more success faster?
Yeah. Success leaves clues, as Tony Robbins says. And that's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing advice, because obviously the more you network and the luckier you get, that's how you were able to get in touch with the CEO. It's funny because I actually was able to interview for my show the founder of Hydro Flask, the World Bomb Company. Yeah, and he's lived an interesting life. And I only got that interview through a stroke of luck. But it wasn't really luck, because I networked and the guy knew who he was and actually connected me to him. So it's interesting how that works. And so you talked about the importance of constant learning, which I think is so true. You definitely want to, particularly with technology, stay on the cutting edge. You don't want to end up like Kodak, you know,
yeah,
or exactly. MySpace.
Polaroid, yeah.
They were at one time a Dow Jones company, I think Kodak, believe it or not.
Yes. Well, and here in Massachusetts, the Polaroid building was pretty famous because it was kind of an iconic design, and it got ripped down years ago. You know, they invented instant photography. They should have been the ones to leap into digital photography, but that was not. They didn't see that. They started that future, but they did not pursue it, which was tragic in the end.
Yeah,
that building knocked down. It's dust now. It's some major 15-story building where that used to be.
Wow, that's crazy. And it's amazing. It's just amazing when you hear these kind of stories, Blockbuster, and apparently they had a chance to merge with Netflix or buy Netflix, and MySpace had a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, they laughed at it. It's weird how, you know, if you don't, particularly with technology, you don't stay on the cutting edge. And, you know, you look at Apple, they stay on the cutting edge with the iPad. And now I believe they're the most valuable brand or company in the world, if I'm not mistaken. $1 trillion
between Amazon and Apple.
Right. And it's interesting. And Netflix is also a good example because they switched their model from DVDs to streaming and from, from content that wasn't original to original content. So very interesting firm, Netflix. And And Facebook obviously has to adapt. So they buy out other companies and they don't want to end up like MySpace. I believe Facebook's having an issue because Apple may make some changes with their privacy settings, Facebook's going to have some, may have some issues and problems going forward. I'm sure they'll be able to adapt, of course.
Right.
And
Nothing lasts forever too. So
that's true as well. Definitely. So, and obviously the government could come in and break up these big tech companies. So that's another thing they have to be wary of, particularly Amazon and Google and whatnot. So again, thank you so much for that great advice. Definitely people should be constantly learning. And you mentioned podcasting. It's interesting. Seth Godin, who's a marketing guru, I'm sure you've heard of him. Bald-headed, wears glasses. He wrote the book Purple Cow. He says everyone should have a podcast, and that podcasting is a new blogging. So if he says it, it must be true, I'm guessing. I recommend it to everyone. It's free to start a podcast, but the cost is really the time, because you have to be consistent and do at least one episode a week minimum if you want to grow your audience. Thank you so much for that. And you mentioned some book recommendations, Keith Ferrazzi's book, Never Eat Alone, which I think is amazing. Are there any other book recommendations that you have for folks?
Yeah. So when I find books that I really enjoy, I love writing. I love learning. So when I find books, especially in the last 15 years or so, that I really enjoy and think more people should know, I buy a lot of them and I give them away. If you know Dr. Cialdini, he's like the Jedi Knight Yoda of ethical influence and persuasion. His firm is actually, well, I shouldn't say that, but he's got the best-selling book on persuasion and influence that's ever existed, like 10 million copies sold.
Yeah.
He studied it extensively. So his six principles of influence, you should absolutely know. I've read and reread that book a million times. Did the two-day workshop that they run on ethical influence in Arizona. And I thought I already knew it all because I'd read the book so many times, but my mind exploded after 2 days of content, and it's just so good. You should know, you don't have to be a natural at influence or persuasion. You can definitely learn it. And most people are not naturals at it.
And
among other things, it helps you to know when you're being sold and what buttons people might be pushing on you, or, you know, when they're trying to convince you and defend yourself, as well as be ethically effective at influencing other people to make the right decisions. So that's an awesome book. Given away a lot of those. I'm a big fan of Dan Pink. So if you've read any of his books, like Drive in particular, Whole New Mind was one of his earlier books. That is where I first found out about him. It's not about left brain people are the best or right brain people are the best. You actually need both, which is part of it resonated for me, because the teamwork aspect, you know, everybody has different skills. So if you can find people that have complementary skills, as well that those that reinforce what you have, you need a mix of those things. So that book really opened my eyes. I've interviewed him twice. It's been a while now. Super nice guy. He's just so focused on the stuff that he cares about, and he's such a great writer. It kind of blows my mind on how well he writes. Guy Kawasaki, almost anything that he's written, the original Mac evangelist back in the day of the Apple II Plus, and he stepped in to help evangelize the Mac, which seemed impossible at the time. And of course, now, as we just discussed, Apple is one of the top two, most valued companies in the world.
And yeah, yeah.
He was there at the beginning telling people they needed a Mac when there was nothing at all like it. So I haven't followed in his footsteps necessarily, but I've certainly followed in the direction that he was pointing to. And I had a chance to interview him back in, God, when was that? 2012, something like that. In Vegas, of course, at a conference. And the last time I had met him in person was 20 years before that, which was his first book. He was at a booth, at a Macworld booth in Boston, promoting the Macintosh Way, which was his first entree. He was not yet a celebrity. And that was that was an interesting moment to meet him 20 years later after everything that happened in his career. I don't know. There's, find whatever you're passionate about and start, start learning, whether it's watching videos, listening to podcasts, reading, whatever works for you. I don't read as much as I used to. I do mostly audiobooks, so I can go for walks or on a drive or something. But find the stuff that you're interested in and get to know the people that are doing what you're interested in doing.
Definitely. Obviously, surrounding yourself with successful people who are at the level you want to be at, so important. They provide advice, mentoring, and so many people like to learn. You'd be shocked. Definitely. And those are great book recommendations. Cialdini's book Influence is, I think, mandatory reading for every human. And
found it much earlier.
And he's written other books, but no other book has been as successful as his Influence. Definitely.
Well, and the rest are really, it's an extension of his original ideas. I mean, he started studying that stuff 40 years ago. So it's, he's been at it for quite a while, and he's just constantly refining it.
Definitely. And also, you mentioned Dan Pink. I've read his book Drive as well. Amazing book about human nature and the different types of motivation. He talks a lot about intrinsic motivation, right? And so that's love great. That book. Yeah. And he also wrote a book on sales, which I have to get to. A lot of people like that, essentially saying we're all working in sales pretty much.
Yes, exactly. That was the last book I interviewed him on. So I think he's done at least two more books since then.
Right. Definitely have to get back to reading more of his stuff. And also you mentioned Keith Ferrazzi's book and the gentleman, what was the last one? Kawasaki. Yes. I'm going to have to look into his stuff as well. And you obviously have written a book yourself. Do you plan on writing another book in the future? I'm sure you would.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, it is everything I'd heard. I know a lot of authors. I've interviewed a lot of authors. My partner has written 13 books at this point.
Yeah.
Everything you hear is true. It's a ton of work. But it's like having kids. It's like, like getting married, like, moving out of the house, all that. You don't know until you've experienced what exactly people are talking about. And apparently this should be impossible, but we wrote our book in 3 months. And co-authoring is usually harder because there's usually more contention for what you're trying to say and who's doing what and who gets more credit and all that kind of stuff. But Tom and I had, at that point, had worked together and known each other for 20 years. So we already knew that our styles were compatible, that we had enough differences that would add more to it than if just one of us wrote it. And it was the most extensively researched that he had ever published. And I think that's the same moving forward, which in hindsight made a lot more work for us to right. corral the research that we did. But it's still selling 7 years later, and it stood the test of time rather well. And it's nice to be able to wave, you know, I have a nice big business card that I can wave at people, send it to them, also to use as a door opener to get into meet a CEO or a potential prospect or whoever, raise funds, whatever it might be, because it does stand out. And that's, and it was exhausting, but it was a ton of fun too, because really getting a chance to peer into a lot of different areas and pull it out. It was a largely research interview base. We didn't publish the interviews as standalone pieces, which I would do moving forward. But I love learning from other people and making those connections and helping to tell their story, which is often not told. You know, it wasn't always famous people that we were talking to. It were people that maybe were lower in the ranks at Cisco or Lowe's or wherever, and helping to tell that story to show other people that you don't have to be, you know, a Michael Jordan or you know whatever. You can be you. Be right. The best you that you can be, and you know, go forth and do good work. So it's that I definitely have some other book ideas that I've been kicking around. It does take a lot of focus. So right now, running two companies that were created during a pandemic, I think I'm probably tapped out for now, but I do love the process of having to go through that thinking to create a book that's worth reading.
Definitely. And that's amazing. I'm definitely going to check out that book that you've written, and of course the podcast you did before. And you know, the thing about writing a book is when you do it, you're seen as an authority, and right. it helps you get in through the door, like you mentioned. And so incredible. I suggest everyone try to write a book. I'm going to try to write a book myself. And I'm curious, obviously you had the podcast earlier on. Is that something you're thinking about getting back into, podcasting?
Yeah. So I think it was a terrible mistake that I stopped, to be honest, because it opened a ton of doors for me. It kind of launched a consulting career in a different direction that I had at that
point. Wow.
And introduced me to a whole bunch of people who are our friends now, and were part of the people that helped us successfully launch the two companies, because they relate to their worlds. So that establishing that, getting word of mouth in the first place, because you're seen as a good person to know, who helps make connections, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's amazing, you know, 15 years, 17 years later, still able to leverage those connections I made a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been extremely useful. So, but you know, it does take it takes a commitment to do this stuff, and doing that regular pace on top of everything else that happens. Yeah. I could certainly do it. But at what expense, and what else, and what am I dropping on the floor that might help us to sell, you know, 10,000 units in Denmark?
So, right.
Maybe I should do that.
Yeah. I totally get it. And obviously with time, you know, time is our most valuable commodity. There's only 24 hours in a day, so you have to figure out what you're going to spend time on. And so it's tough, obviously. But you mentioned that with podcasting, you've built a lot of relationships, made a lot of connections, because you were interviewing all these profile people and you were seen at the same level as them, obviously, because you were interviewing them. So it's an amazing way for people to build connect. I'm surprised people don't do it more often. But obviously maybe time's the major factor there.
It seems complicated too. You know, it's never been easier. You know, right. We all have phones now. So, you know, the barrier to entry is very low and arguably free at this point. You're just using whatever you have, and you can go fancier if you like, but it's not necessarily. And you can start wherever you want to. You don't have to be the next, you know, 10 million listens in an hour kind of guy.
Yeah, definitely. Because that's, I guess, similar to my situation. I started the show in January, and I used my iPhone and the microphone on there and the camera on there, and it seems to be working well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, as time goes by, I can always upgrade. But I got the Hydro Flask founder on, so that's, I'm on to something here and having some success. So yeah.
We'll have to get you a proxy cam.
Yeah, that's definitely. I'm curious, can you, obviously this conversation has been very enlightening and educational, entertaining. I'm curious, can you go ahead and describe all the ways people can get in touch with you to, if they want to use, or they know someone who could use your services, or to put a dynamic center of influence in their network?
Sure. So LinkedIn is my go-to resource. I was user number 78,000 or so. And now they have something like a billion users, which is, yeah, is kind of, I thought I was late to LinkedIn too. And that's another story for another day. I joined in 2003 and I was like, this is never going to last, but here we are. So LinkedIn.com/in/Dan Kelson. So between my two businesses, the wonderful piece of having your own business is you get to choose your email address and the company name. So dan@plexicam.com, if you're interested in that side of the business. Plexicam.com is the e-commerce site too, where you can purchase. Dan@Veventas, VEVENTAAS, virtualeventsasaservice.com is where I'm at for that side of the business. So if you're interested in running events that don't look exactly like everybody else's Zoom events or Hopin or whatever platform that most people tend to gravitate towards, it is not about the technology that your audience is experiencing it through necessarily. It's really about what you're trying to do to accomplish with your audience that is probably not just slap your own logo on somebody else's platform and assume that a bunch of rectangles on screen are going to carry the day. There's more to it than that, and getting the best performances out of the people that you're having on camera, doing the right audience engagement so it's not totally passive and a bunch of zombies sitting there passing out on you. That is a very different business. So if you're interested in both, just reach out to one of those. But those are the two kind of cards. I'm not as active on Twitter anymore. I just don't have, I used to be on it religiously, I would say. Very early on, I was in the top 10 users of Twitter in Boston in the first couple of years.
Wow.
Did awesome things for me. Actually, the biggest consulting deal I'd ever landed came from a tweet,
which, wow,
revisited in a different interview. But if you want to be found, you have to be findable, and you better put yourself out there. So find where your potential audience is and get known however you need to.
Definitely. And thank you so much for that advice and the information that you shared and provided us. Your contact info will be listed in the episode description box so people can see it and read it there. All right. Thank you so much for being a guest. I want to thank the audience for viewing and listening to the episode. Is there, I'm going to go ahead and give you the last word or final send off. Is there anything else you want to mention? Or
no, so I mean, it is fun. It's usually, I've been on the other side interviewing somebody else. So it is always fun to do it this way. I like that mix, which I think is also healthy. I think that was another critical mistake that I made, was that I was usually the one interviewing somebody else.
Yes.
And I should have spent more time in also being in the other seat, because if you're going to be seen as somebody who matters, then you also want to be in demand as somebody who has something, interesting to say. So maybe that might be a path for people to get into. If you don't want to start your own podcast, find somebody you want to be on and reach out. You never know what's going to happen. People are doing podcasts. They constantly need new material. So that's a wonderful built-in piece of potential demand there. But I do think that it is one of the easier and frankly more fun ways to get known. You can just leverage what other people know. Like, I had questions for other authors. Like, I loved your book, like Dan Pink, your book on Drive. When you were talking about intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation, I always get confused. So when you said that, what did you actually mean, since I have you here? And he's like, well, then we chat for 20 minutes about that. And when else would I have ever gotten the ability to do that? And it only happened because I reached out to him and asked.
Wow, that's amazing. And again, thank you so much for that advice. And you know, you got it because you went out and you did that three-letter word, A-S-K. Mm-hmm. They say it hurts. It doesn't hurt to ask, but it only hurts when you don't ask.
Yeah.
So interesting saying. Again, thank you so much for that advice. And just so you know, I actually interviewed another guest who told me the magic happens when you're a guest on other people's podcasts. So okay. It's definitely something I suggest to you. I'm going to go ahead and email you recommendations on how to easily do that. And if you want to be a guest on other shows, I know other podcasters that I can personally introduce you to. I'm going to go ahead and do that. And great. You got it. So great way for one to promote themselves. So again, I want to thank you for being a guest, and I want to thank the audience for viewing and listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone, take care and have a wonderful day. Take care and bye-bye.
Thanks, Luke.
You got it. Thanks, man.
Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. We can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.